This is an interview with Mr. James Ward, 640 Cedar Lane, Dinuva, California, by Judith Gannon on January 24, 1981 at 3 o'clock p.m. Okay, Mr. Ward, why don't you start out by telling me a little bit about your childhood in Oklahoma?
Well, I was born February the 19th, 1911 in Rogers County, Oklahoma. We moved to Wagner County in 1915. I lived there till I was 26 years old, and then I came to California. And I've been here, right here in the same town ever since.
When you were 26, what year would that have been?
It was 1937. Yeah.
Okay. Did your family farm in Oklahoma?
Yes, yes. That's all I knew before I came here, was farm.
Did you own a farm?
Yeah, my father, he failed to ever pay for it. He owned one for several years, but lost it during the Depression. Yeah, it's not a very good farming area there anyway, but some years we'd have real good crops, and other years not so good. Last year I was there, it was a complete failure. Went 72 days without a drop of rain, and everything just burned up. That's what caused me to come out here.
Were you farming with your dad then?
I was farming part of the place, yes.
How many acres did you have?
Well, in all told, there was 210 acres. It all wasn't in cultivation. There was quite a bit of woods pasture there. Oh, I guess we had probably 120 acres in cultivation, something like that.
What did you
grow? Oh, corn, cotton, mostly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Raised a few hogs and cattle.
What do you remember your family life as being like when you were on the farm in Oklahoma?
Well, we always, there on the farm, most of the time, we always had an abundance of stuff to eat, but never very much money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I remember.
That seems to be a common theme with the people.
That's right.
Trying to farm in Oklahoma.
Yes. Some years we'd do real well, but other years you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't irrigate there, I take it.
No, there was no irrigation at all there. Very little now, if any, that I've ever noticed when I was back there. I've heard of a few places that did, but I've never saw it. Now, out farther west in Oklahoma, there is some irrigation.
Do you remember any of the government policies? I know your wife talked now just a few minutes ago about the killing of the animals.
Yes.
That made it tougher for the farmers.
Yes, I remember very well about that. And I'll show you how crooked a lot of that stuff was. It was unjust. The year before they started that, Cowrie got in our hogs and killed them all. The next year they started this program. The farm agent came out there and had a meeting there in the schoolhouse. He got up and told them about the benefits of the program. Well, father asked him, says, what are you going to do with a fellow like me? He says, I don't have any hogs. I lost all mine last year from the cowrie. He says, you sign a government contract and says we'll pay you for every one of them hogs. My dad told him, says, no. He says, I'm getting pretty well long in years. I've never taken anything for nothing yet, and I'm not about to start in now. Then when they started where you had to have stamps to sell your cotton, the government policy was that everybody was to share alike in that. Well, they notified everybody to be at a certain place, you know, when they was going to give out these stamps to sell your cotton. Well, our neighbor across the road from us, he'd signed up. My dad didn't. We went out there to get our stamps, and when he gave my father his stamps, he looked at them, and they were just half of what the fellow that had signed the contract. Dad asked him about that. Oh, he says, you don't have a contract. And, boy, I thought he was going to kill somebody.
What did he mean he didn't have a contract? What was
the contract for the government on this cutting down on cotton and so on and so forth.
Okay, then the government wanted the farmers to sign a contract saying they would not grow more.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your dad didn't do that?
No. And my dad kept pretty well up on the rules and regulations. He told him what the rules and regulations was. And he bemeaned him there for, I guess, 5 or 10 minutes, that guy. And finally he asked him, says, when can I catch you in your office? He says, I will be there Thursday. Well, Dad says, I'll be there Thursday too. He says, you better have that straightened up or you're gonna go on my mark the rest of your days. We went down. We walked in the door, boy, he met us with a smile, says, I'm getting it straightened out.
So then your dad got as many stamps as
Oh, yes, he got just as many stamps as per acre as the other fellow had.
How many children were there in your family?
Well, there was only four of us grown, lived to maturity. And there was, I have two brothers and a sister. Dead. Died. Well, my oldest brother, he died before I was born. He was kicked by a colt and killed him. And the other two, I don't really know. I was young and I don't know what killed him. Yeah, even my oldest brother was about 8 years old. And he was supposedly a pet colt, kicked him in the stomach. Of course, heck, there was no hospitals, and there was doctors, but none of them operated or anything, and consequently, I think he's kicked one day and died the next.
Mm-hmm. So then in about 37, you and Mildred were married then, right?
Yes, we were married in 1934.
How did you meet your wife?
Oh, she came down there in our neighborhood to teach school.
She was a school teacher, and you were one of the farmers in the nearby area?
Yeah. We got dating once in a while, and it just happened.
What kinds of things did you do when you were dating and courting during that time?
Oh, well, I tell you, we didn't do very much because we had no money. We had no money. No, we very, very seldom got to go in town to a movie or anything like that because we just couldn't afford it. We'd have country dances and things like that, and that's about it.
Visiting back and forth or going over to her house and
Kind of thing. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So then you were married in 34, and you still were farming in partnership with your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was no times, there was just no work. No, nobody had any money to hire anybody with.
Mm-hmm.
If you did, you wouldn't make 50 cents or a buck a day, which is good wages then.
Yeah. So then, as I understand from your wife, you came out here a year before.
I came out in 37. Her parents came out, and I came out with them. I was coming anyway, and so they decided they'd come. I came out with them. Yeah, I landed here in the 14th of March, and in May, the wife came out on train. She spent the summer here. She had the school under contract. She went back that fall, and to teach school. I stayed up until, I believe it was November, when the work was about all done. And then I went back, and then we came back here in spring of 38 to live.
Where did you live? Well, let me back step when you and her parents came out, did you, who had the car and how did you?
Yeah, her father had the car. I sold my car to get money to come out here on. And we just shared expenses. And when we first got here, we went out here at this, what used to be a little auto court out here, and rented a cabin out there and stayed out there for a while. And then about the time the wife came out here, I got a job on a ranch over here by Cutler. And he had a little house there. The wife and I moved.
Okay, we were talking about when you sold your car to come to California.
Yeah. And what I done when I first got here.
Uh-huh.
Went looking for work. And then when the wife came out, I got this job on this little farm out here. And there was a house there on it, just a little, might say, just a cabin. Mm-hmm. We lived in that summer. Come just before school started, why, she got on the train, went back. I stayed on until November, sometime in November. I don't remember the date. And then I went back and stayed back there, and then we came back in 38, and we've been right here in this town ever since.
You spent the winter back in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do that winter?
I worked about 9 weeks, I think. Okay, I got a job in a garage, worked in a garage for 9 weeks. And where there was nobody coming in the garage, of course, the fella couldn't keep me. Mm-hmm. Well, I was making a buck and a half a day.
What kind of work did you do on the farm with that first summer that you were here?
Well, he had a bunch of young vines that I kept tied up and irrigated and sulfured and hauled some fertilizer and first one thing another like that. Just then up later in the summer when wasn't too much to do out there on the farm, I went over here to Reedley and got in the packing house, worked in the packing house. And well, he was packing peaches, working on the floor there in the packing house. That fall, I picked some grapes, and then when that was done, I went over here at Sunmade. They had a receiving station here, and worked there, receiving raisins in there till that was over with, and then I went back to Oklahoma. Because there wasn't much left to do around here but pick cotton, and I couldn't make enough pay for a sack.
Picking cotton wasn't your...
Nope, that's one thing I couldn't do. I've tried it, but I couldn't made anything at it, so...
And you went back to Oklahoma, and then that after school was out in 38, then you came back.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then?
Well, I'll tell you, that was the roughest year I ever had. There was less work, seemed like, in 38 than there was in 37. And 39 was a little better. And then when the war broke out in Europe, why, things went to picking up. And just a little bit, why, you could work all you wanted to.
So when at the time that you could work as much as you wanted to, when was that about? About what?
The war broke out over in 39, September 39, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1940, it was pretty good then.
So,
I worked pretty steady all the time then.
So in 38 and 39, those were really tough years.
They were certainly rough, yes, they were.
What were you doing at that time? What kind of work were you doing?
Anything I could get. Anything I could get.
One child, right?
Well, we had our second child in April 1939.
So how did you manage with your checks so few and far between? What do you...
Well, what we made, we didn't spend anything we didn't have to. The one thing that depression done to me is made a conservative out of me. A lot more so than it did my wife.
When you say conservative, you mean if you don't have the money, you don't buy the item, is that?
As a general rule, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The first thing I went in debt for out here was in 1940. We didn't have a refrigerator up till then. And McMahon's in Fresno was advertising over the radio. We had a little old $2 radio. And I was always listening to that, and they was advertising, no down payments and anything you wanted. So I seen things was picking up. I told the wife, I says, well, let's go up there and see if her credit's any good. Went in there and I bought a new refrigerator and a used couch and a chair. And they asked, I told them, I said, it has to be on payments. And when they got what we wanted, why, they said, how much do you want to pay down on it? I said, just as little as possible. He says, can you pay the sales tax today? So I paid the sales tax down on it. I had a little more money than that, but I wanted to hang on to it.
Yeah.
And so I bought that, and in the summertime when work was good, I'd pay payments ahead so I wouldn't have to pay anything through the winter months.
Mm-hmm. During those two really hard years, did you usually live in a cabin on a...
No, we'd got a little house down here right here in town. Small two rooms and a kitchen. And a bath, and I think we paid $8 a month for it.
But you had the... This is a continuation of a taped interview with Mr. James Ward of Dinuba, California. Okay, Mr. Ward, we were talking about those 2 years of 38 and 39, and I believe you just said that you had a house here in town,
mm-hmm.
And but it did have the running.
Yeah, line. we had that, and we lived there till I think we 2 years, and we got another house, a little better house on down the street. Well, the fellow that owned that, he wanted the use of the house himself for some reason or other, and I got a chance to get another house. And we lived right on that street, from 38 to 47. And then we bought a place just out the edge of town, acre ground. Lived out there for 13 years. In the meantime, well, before we moved, bought that place, the wife got started teaching, and things was looking up pretty good. Of course, we had three kids, and we didn't have a lot of money, but we was doing pretty well, considering.
After those 2 years, where you picked up any kind of work that you could get, doing, you know, working in the fields or whatever, what kind of work did you do after that?
Well, I believe it was 1940 or 41, I don't remember which it was. My father-in-law and I, we went out here and bought a hay baler and got to doing custom hay baling. Well, it was fairly good, but it was something I didn't care too much about. So I got out of it, and well, then I worked some for him, and we'd usually go out to work before daylight of a morning, be there as soon as day light enough to work, and we'd work till about noon. It gets so hot or the hay gets so dry. I'd come in, we'd come home, I'd go uptown here and work in a garage.
Oh.
And I wound up working there steady for 5 or 6 years. Another fellow taking over the shop, and then I went down, that was in 1950. I had a chance to go to work for this sawmill out here, up in the woods. I worked 3 months at that, which the pay wasn't too good, and it was away from home, and kind of expensive, so I quit that and came back down here and drove truck all fall. And worked in the garage, just as they could use me, and so on and so forth. And then I in the meantime, a fellow across the street had a shop, and he was looking for somebody, and him and the fellow that owned the truck was pretty good buddies, and so as soon as this fellow got the trucking season was over with, he told me, says, you can go to work over here for Ernie Payne if you're interested in the job. Well, I said, I got to work somewhere. And so he picked up the phone, and Ernie came over and wanted to know what I wanted to go to work. Well, I says, Ernie, I says, I don't know anything about you. You don't know anything about me. I said, I'll come over and work a week. If you're satisfied and I'm satisfied, then we'll talk about the wages. And I stayed there for a little over 5 years. And then I went back, got a chance to go back at a better job up in the woods. And I went back up there, and I stayed there 17 years, not up in the woods all the time. I spent 5, 6 years up in the woods in the summertime and down at the mill over winter. And then I went to work out at the mill and worked there till I retired.
What kind of work did you do when you were in the woods?
Well, the first year I was up there, I piled brush. They had to clean up so far back from all the roads. That's what I didn't like. The next time I went back up there, I went to work building roads. I was powder man.
Oh, that's when your wife said you were the dynamite.
Yeah. The fellow that was working there, he quit a little while after I went up there, and he came out one morning and told me, says, you're the powder man.
That's dangerous work, isn't it?
I thought it was before I knew anything about it. It's not dangerous. The only danger there is in it much is don't fool with it when it's stormy, lightning. And if you'll get uphill above your shots, you got very little to worry about. I never put off but 2 shots up there that it scared me at all.
Did somebody teach you this when he walked off the job, or did you just sort of have to pick it up on your own?
Well, I learned a little bit from the other fella that was there when I first went in there, and that's all I knew.
When did you get down here to see your family?
I'd come home weekends. I got a little trailer pulled up or lived in it.
And your family lived in the house here in Geneva.
Yeah. Yeah, the kid was up pretty good size then. She'd get along fine. So, one year I went to Wasco and loaded potatoes.
What year was that?
Oh, I don't remember. 41, I worked I worked for the same fellow both years. Yeah, it was Emil Penner at Arvin.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me back the next year, but I went down there and looked it over, and I didn't want it that year.
Why not?
Uh-huh. Well, there wasn't too many good guys around. They had, before, when we loaded those cars, we put 300 sacks of potatoes in a car. We had to stand them up six rows through the cars, double them up, two sacks on top of that, out five from the end of the car, and then you drop down to a single. And you had to put them in there where they'd just come out to 300 sacks to the car.
Is that a railroad car?
Yeah, a railroad car. And they had a bunch of kids in there. They was letting them truck them in there and just bump them up. They just didn't want another's way. And that's when I said, I don't want it. It would have been easier if I'd had a good partner for the two of us to have done it. Because me and my buddies down there, we'd load a car sometime in 30 minutes. We didn't walk. And we had a nine-car spot, three cars long, three cars wide. And, of course, now on that outside car, you really had to move. Go in there and hand stack four sacks of potatoes and get back before they had four more ready for you to go.
That sounds like it was hard work.
It was hard work, but I was pretty young then. It didn't hurt me.
How did you find out about where there was work and people?
Oh, just hear people talking. Wherever I hear of anything, well, if I just wasn't working, I'd go see about it.
Did you ever find that you went someplace and there was nothing there?
Oh, well, yeah, many, many times, yeah. Whether the job was filled or something, yes.
So that you kind of have to, like, waste your gas and go down there?
Yeah, that's right. Well, gas was cheap, though, then.
The paychecks were a lot smaller.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that yesterday Monday when I was here, that you said something about you didn't think that having gone through this experience had much of an effect on you. And you didn't look back on it as it having been a really terribly hard time.
No, it don't. The only thing it's done to me that I can think of is I've always, since then, been careful how I spent my money. Mm-hmm. So if I hadn't have, like some people are, I'd be in debt today. But we don't owe anybody a dime, and we've got a little money stashed away.
I think a lot of people that live through depression now find it hard even now to spend. They really, you know, they're really very, mm-hmm. very careful with their money.
I was very reluctant to buy this place when I did. But I got a good deal. I knew it was a good deal. I got a lot more out of the place I had than it was worth. I only went in debt $6,600 when we bought this place.
Oh. Did good, huh? What do you think about the term Okie? What do you think that means?
Well, I think to me, in my estimation of it, it was overblown too much. The wife don't agree with me. But I found out on the job that regardless of where you was from, somebody'd make a joke about it. Mm-hmm. And it was all in fun. It wasn't, the reflection on me because I was an Okie. They done it about the Arkies and wherever you're from.
So you don't see Okie as necessarily meaning...
No, I don't think anything about
anything
it.
Anything other than the place that you came from.
That's right. That's right. For myself, mm-hmm. that's the way I feel about it.
Did you ever feel like you were discriminated against or there was hostility on the part of the local people because you were a migrant from Oklahoma?
No. No, I never did.
You never felt like anybody looked down on or anything like that?
No. They might have thought that about me, but I didn't feel it. I didn't get that feeling from it.
How about the way that you were treated by the growers, the people that you worked for, the ranchers?
I was always treated very well, other than awfully low pay. Mm-hmm. Now, here's one little item I want to, this goes back to the first year we was here. This fellow I worked for over here, Cutler, on that little ranch, everybody told me he was wealthy. He had a plumbing shop up here, and he was a Scotchman, and so he held on to his money. He always paid cash. He never gave me a check. He'd always come out of a Saturday evening, and he'd pay me cash. Well, my wages came out to $16.20 a week. That's 9 hours a day is all he'd let me work. And it was $16.20 a week. Well, one day he couldn't make the exact change. He gave me $16.25. The next payday, he helped that nickel out and reminds me, says, I overpaid you a nickel last week.
Oh, no. To make sure that he got every penny's worth.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Then the work got slow out there when I left there. He got awful mad. Said that's the only time that I ever heard anyone say anything about an Oklahomian. He didn't say Okie. And I quit there. He just only wanted me to work about 2 or 3 days a week. Well, heck, I couldn't. I got something else. I could do better. Well, I did it. He said he'd never hire another fellow from Oklahoma. I says, that's your privilege, buddy. I says, you don't have to.
Because you didn't want to keep on working for him only a couple of days a week?
That's right. That's right.
That was...
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Roosevelt?
Roosevelt? It's the worst thing that ever happened to the United States of America. Yeah, that's what I think. He was, to my estimation, he was a dishonest crook.
Would you like to talk a little bit more about why it is that you think like that?
Why?
Uh-huh.
Well, he started the country on the spending spree, and it snowballed. He was going to, when the war broke out in Europe, well, he was dishonest there. He says, we'll sell to anybody that come here with the money. A little bit, England ran out of money. So it was lend-lease. It was first cash and carry. Then it was lend-lease. And then it come on down to just before we got into it. Now this is what I've read and I've heard it too. It's never been disputed, but Roosevelt, about a week before Pearl Harbor, he told 3 or 4 of his cabinet members, says, we're gonna be in war Sunday, December the 7th. But did he notify
his people in Pearl Harbor?
In Pearl Harbor or anywhere else, no. He wanted it, but I'll tell you why. He'd run all of these programs that he's had, and times wasn't too much better. He wanted to get the country into war to get everybody to work. Now, I think the country would have been a lot better shape today if Roosevelt or anybody like him had never been president. I never did vote for the man, and I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever work on any of his...
WPA or anything?
Yeah,
nope,
any of that
nope,
junk.
Nope. Never did.
Just because you were opposed to it, or because it didn't happen to work out?
Well, it never worked out right for me. I never even tried to get on it. And back there in Oklahoma, I knew people that owned their farms. And one case, they had 2 or 3 little oil wells on it. Of course, the oil was cheap, not too big of producers, but anyhow, that fella, his whole family was on that. He had several grown sons, and every darn one of them was on that. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't think that was all Roosevelt's fault. It was the administrators he had in there. I know when they started this farm program back there, there was a guy in the federal penitentiary in Leavenworth, Kansas, in there for counterfeiting liquor stamps. They got him out and put him to head of one of those programs down there.
You're kidding.
You darn right.
You're kidding. Oh, that's so
No, sir, that there, you can go back there and ask some of the old timers if old Fayette Wirtz wasn't in the federal penitentiary.
What was the guy's name?
Fayette Wirtz.
Fayette
Wirtz, W-E-R-T-Z.
How about that? That is something.
Of course, Roosevelt didn't know him, mm-hmm. but his henchmen around over the country did.
Yeah.
That was the most terrible thing I think had ever happened when they started all that stuff.
Did you ever know or talk to any people or hear anything about the camps that the government set up during that time, the late, I think it was the late 30s, early 40s, those the places where the migrant farm workers could live in these government camps?
I'd heard something about it, yes, but I'd never run on to any of them.
So, and you... None of the people that you knew had ever lived in one of them?
No, none that I've personally come in contact with.
There was a lot of talk about the way that the growers, the reason that apparently the government camps came into being is that there was a lot of flack about the growers not providing any kind of place for their laborers to live, that they were living in such squalor.
Well, that was quite a bit of that probably true. I've seen people living in tents here working. I never did myself, mm-hmm. but I've seen it.
That was in the late 30s?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was apparently...
There was a, over here at Orange, around Orange Cove, there was a lot of tents in there. And then I knew one fella, well, he was from the same area that we was from, lived out here in a tent one summer.
Did they ever have any ditch camps around here, the people that pitched their tents on the irrigation canals?
Well, this one fella out here was right close to an irrigation canal. Now, that's the only one I ever knew. I was at this camp once, but I think when you first went to Orange Cove, there was quite a few tents over
there. There were a lot of tents over there then.
Mm-hmm. That was right there in town, though, or at the edge of town. I don't know if it was in the city limits or not.
Yeah, they were in the city limits.
You started to talk earlier about what your impression of the Grapes of Wrath was. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, there was, as she told you, there was part of it true, but there was a lot of it exaggeration. Make it interesting.
Uh huh. What parts of it do you think were true? What was pretty much.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been so long since I've read it or even saw the film on it that I don't recall too many of the true what they said. Of course, as she said about that fellow dying and I buried him outside the road and all, I knew that was alive and started, but and a lot of other capers, it was, I thought was just put in there for fun.
The way the people lived on the way out here and after they got here, I think that was a pretty accurate story.
Well, possibly so, I don't know, but I never did put too much stock in a lot of it.
Did you ever hear any stories about or were involved in any of the attempts to organize the laborers at that time?
I never was involved. I've heard a little about it, but no, I never. I've stayed clear of any of that because I wanted to work. Now, I was working in the cannery over here when it went union. They told us we all had to go out through a certain door there and vote whether to go union or not.
What cannery was that?
Libby's.
Libby's cannery here
In Selma.
In Selma?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
I couldn't tell you. I don't remember.
Was it in
the... This was in the 40s, though.
The 40s.
Yeah.
Okay.
They said they would close the cannery down. Well, that was, I could make more money there in a short period of time than I could any place I'd ever worked. Well, I sure didn't want them to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to vote yes or no. So I slipped out and got by and never voted either way. Well, as it went, it did go union. It did make a little better place out of it to work. Your seniority counted then. But as far as wages, it didn't help us too much. Wages was on the rise anyhow at the time. And no, I could go in there. I worked in the warehouse, trucking, stacking cans, worked piecework. And I could go in there and make double the hourly pay. Mm-hmm. Of course, we didn't. We worked twice as hard, mm-hmm. too. But you go in there 6-8 weeks, and I can make some pretty decent checks.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can think of as you have been talking about this whole period that you would like to mention that I may have forgotten to ask you?
No, I can't think of anything right now.
Okay, why don't we stop there?
Fine with me.
Okay.